I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. In many ways, domestic workers are running the USA, or they're at least the proverbial woman behind the scenes. They take care of our children and our aging parents, clean our houses, and do some of the most valuable jobs in our communities, like caring for the disabled. An estimated 2.5 million people in the U.S. are domestic workers, most of whom are women. But they work in a bit of a legal limbo. And many are not legal residents, so they're even more vulnerable to possible exploitation. In the 1930s, the National Labor Relations Act was passed to protect the rights of most workers in the United States, but domestic workers and farm workers were deliberately excluded from these laws. So there's a new movement to bring labor rights to these workers. New York passed the state's historic Domestic Workers Bill of Rights in 2010. We'll find out how that's working so far. And California has legislation pending called the California Domestic Worker Bill of Rights. We'll explore what that might mean for us here. Joining us to talk about all of this, we have Ai-Jen Poo. She's director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. In 2000, she helped start Domestic Workers United, the New York-based organization that spearheaded the successful passage of that state's historic Domestic Workers Bill of Rights in 2010. Hi, Ai-Jen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And here in studio, we have Lil Milagro Martinez-Cornejo. She is the Northern California Field Coordinator for the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights Coalition with Mujeres Unidas y Activas. She coordinates with local coalition partners and allies and helps plan mobilization efforts in Sacramento and around the Bay. And she serves as liaison to the Student Subcommittee for the Bill of Rights. She also works with Hand in Hand, a Domestic Employers Association, as a local organizer. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And we also have in studio Matilde Vasquez. She is a member of La Colectiva, which is a worker-run cleaning collective that emphasizes worker empowerment, organizing, and environmentally friendly cleaning. She has been with the Colectiva for a year. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
We are very happy to have all of you. And you can join our conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number. If you're a domestic worker, what's your experience on the job? How are you treated? And have you ever tried to organize? The number is 866-798-8255. Again, it's a toll-free number. And if you're an employer of a nanny or a house cleaner, a cook, a babysitter, an assistant for an elder family member, if so, what is your arrangement with your worker, and how do you treat them, and what does fair treatment look like to you? And would you support the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights? You can give us a call at 866-798-TALK. That's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Or you can send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. So what I'd like to start with, and maybe we can get Lil Milagro to get in on this first, there are an estimated 200,000 domestic workers in California, and obviously it's a little bit hard to count these numbers because of the way that these workers are, you know, in private homes, et cetera. But so for the purposes of our conversation, can you define domestic worker for us?
So for the purpose of the bill, for AB 889, the Emiliano Perez bill, we define domestic workers as nannies, housekeepers, and personal care attendants.
Nannies, housekeepers, and personal... No, nobody else?
No.
Okay. And so what are some of the misconceptions and stereotypes about who is a domestic worker?
You mean that people have when they employ a domestic worker?
Yeah.
They often think that the domestic worker is here without paper, so they don't have documents. They often think that they're easily exploited and that they won't fight back, or they won't assert their rights in the same way that other workers would, and that they often need the money. And so because they need the money, then employers are often able to load on more responsibilities because there's an idea that they should be grateful for the jobs that they have.
So essentially you hire somebody as a babysitter, but then you expect them to also do all of the house cleaning.
Yes, but I will say that for the purposes of our bill, casual babysitters, so people who work under 6 hours doing babysitting work, are not included in
our
bill.
And what is a typical day like for, say, a nanny or a housekeeper?
Well, a housekeeper usually they start cleaning all the house. And if you, for example, if you work in a house, inside the house, that means you're going to sleep there. You have to clean the house, and then you have to take care of the baby. So sometimes, that's why sometimes you don't have time to get some rest, and you don't have time to eat. That's why we're trying to get the Bill of Rights, because inside the Bill of Rights, you have one point that it says you have the right to sleep 8 hours. Usually, your work starts like 5 o'clock in the morning and finish around 10 o'clock. So sometimes
this is somebody who's a live-in housekeeper, babysitter.
House,
is that
yes.
Right?
Okay. You have to clean the house. Maybe the babies are sleeping, so you have time to clean the house. But sometimes you don't have time to cook your own food. You have to eat what you find there, because the babies is gonna have their special food. So there's another point. We have to have the right to eat our own food. So, and the thing is that during the day, the time goes fast, so you don't have time to get some rest among the hours. Because if you finish to clean the house, you have to iron the clothes, you have to wash the clothes, so you have to take care of all of the houses, the duty all of the houses.
And have you experienced this firsthand?
My experience? Okay, I didn't have any kind of that experience, but I saw my mom work during many years in a house. And as I told you, she used to wake up 5 and go to sleep 10 o'clock. And sometimes I used to go on weekends to help with the babies, to play with them, clean shoes or clean the freezer. But I saw her work every day by day, without any vacation, mm-hmm. So the 12 years. And she used to have only one day free. And that means that I didn't know how she got to do that, because she didn't, when the babies got sick, she didn't have time to sleep. Sometimes I have to go with them to take care of them. And that means that she raised other babies, and I was behind that. Mm-hmm. And now she said that she spent her life taking other babies. Not, she didn't have time for me. And okay, that's in one size is good, because she got that in that way the money to go ahead. But the other bad thing is that she didn't have time to me. So now we are like some kind of exchange, because many, many years, more than 10 years, she was working in that way. I'm proud of being a domestic worker. I think that I'm doing this job, I'm honoring his life, her life. But like this, you're going to find more story, bad story, sad story about different kind of abuse. Sometimes you're going to find employers that they don't, they say, you don't have the right to take a shower. You don't have the right to use this bathroom. So that's why we're trying to get this Bill of Rights.
And that is Matilde Vasquez. She's with La Colectiva, a worker-run cleaning collective. And I want to turn to Lil Milagro Martinez Cornejo. What is actually in the California Domestic Workers Bill of Rights? What would this bill do?
So this bill would actually include domestic workers and give domestic workers the same rights as other workers enjoy. So those rights are the right to 8 uninterrupted hours of sleep if you're a live-in housekeeper, or if you live in the home that you're taking care of. It would give you the right to meal and rest breaks, to the use of kitchen facilities, to be able to make your own food, especially as if you come from like either a different culture or you have special dietary needs that allows you to actually use the kitchen to actually be able to prepare that food, and the right to overtime pay. And again, these are the same rights. We're not asking for special rights. We're asking for the extension of the same rights that every other worker enjoys.
And it's my understanding that there was a lot of controversy around this bill at first, and so a lot of the provisions were negotiated out of this bill. What was negotiated out?
So some of the things that were negotiated out were the right to like paid vacation, or the right to like paid sick days. And I think another thing that was negotiated out was the right to actually have notice of when you're going to be terminated. So much of the negotiation when we talk to domestic workers will talk about how much they care for the families, how much they care for the homes. And part of what they want to do, a lot of the domestic workers, when we talk to them, is they wanted to keep this as, they wanted this to be of benefit to everybody. They wanted everyone to win on this. And what we were able to negotiate out was because so many domestic workers so care so much about the houses that they take care of. So it's showing that we're willing to meet people where they're at.
And in-home health care providers were also not covered by this bill, right?
Well, personal care attendants are covered. So personal care attendants can be people who care for seniors or people with disabilities, and they're in the bill.
They are in the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the bill is just sitting in a Senate Appropriations Committee?
Yes.
So is it stalled? Is it expected to pass?
Right now we're in conversation with senators to move it out of appropriations and then to get it to the Senate floor for the 21 votes that it needs to pass, and then to get it to the governor's office.
And Ai-Jen, let's turn to you, because New York passed a bill similar to this, and you were instrumental in getting it passed. Can you talk about what the New York bill does and kind of what's been the effect so far?
Absolutely. The New York Domestic Workers Bill of Rights was a labor of love of hundreds of workers who sacrificed days' pay to go to Albany and tell their stories, and to march and to build coalition. And after 6 years of hard work and organizing, this legislation made the first big historic breakthrough in establishing rights for domestic workers in the country. And what it did is it essentially created protections that did not exist before, including protection from discrimination and harassment. It defined the minimum wage and overtime hours so that every worker could get access to overtime pay. It created a minimum of 3 days paid leave under the law and per year. And it also required that the Department of Labor do a study to try to understand the feasibility of collective bargaining for this workforce. Mm-hmm. Because similar to California, there was a lot of discussion and debate about whether we could include things like paid holidays, paid sick days, paid vacation, things that are generally found in a collective bargaining agreement or in a good contract, whether we could include some of those in the Bill of Rights, even though they're generally not legislated under the law because of the special nature of the domestic work industry and how difficult it would be to collectively bargain even if domestic workers were included under those protections and rights. So essentially we got protection from discrimination and harassment, a minimum of 3 days paid leave per year, minimum wage and overtime laws clarified to include more workers, and the possibility of future legislation towards expanding rights that you might generally win and achieve through bargaining.
And, you know, you started this when you were a law student, right? What got you to begin organizing?
Actually, I never went to law school.
Oh, sorry.
I started this right after college. I graduated from college, a women's studies major, and I was already organizing on campus and involved in grassroots community organizations in New York. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of some of the first organizing efforts to bring together domestic workers in the immigrant community in New York. And I've had the great fortune of seeing that movement and that work evolve over the last 12 years. And, I mean, I remember some of the first meetings when domestic workers were just starting to come together, you know, 5 and 10 women in church basements in New York. And now we have this vibrant movement of 35 member organizations representing domestic workers in 19 cities and 11 states around the country. And we're incredibly proud of our sisters in California who fought so hard for the California Bill of Rights and are moving it so quickly through the legislature. And I do think that a victory in California will be a huge historic step forward and allow this to become not just something that happened in New York, but build national momentum for something that needs to happen state by state across the country.
Well, one of the things that opponents of the California bill say is that they argue that it would make hiring people for services like babysitting or house cleaning or elder care prohibitively expensive. Did you find that any of those fears came to be true in New York?
Not at all. In fact, it's been most of our experience that many employers are paying far above the minimum wage and overtime regulations, and that what it does is it's actually helpful for employers to have a clear guideline for what the minimum standard should be. Oftentimes, if you go on some of these parents' listservs or chat rooms, a lot of the conversation is parents wanting to figure out what is the right thing to do when it comes to hiring practices, because it's not stated anywhere. There's no guidelines. There's no regulations unless you have some basic standards like in New York. And what the Bill of Rights allowed was for a conversation about what standards should look like, at least minimum standards. And I think employers have found that helpful as a guideline, but also as a place to start in terms of negotiation and open communication with their domestic workers about what the employment relationship should look like.
And that's Ai-Jin Poo. She's director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. We're also joined by Matilde Vasquez with La Colectiva, which is a worker-run cleaning collective, and Lil Milagro Martinez Cornejo. She is an organizer with Mujeres Unidas y Activas. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We're going to go to our callers in just a moment here, and I want to give out the number. It's 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-TALK. And if you're a domestic worker, we'd really like to hear, what has your experience on the job been? How are you treated? And have you ever tried to organize? And if you're an employer of a house cleaner, a babysitter, an assistant for elderly family members, what's your arrangement with them? What questions do you have for our guests? We're asking, what does justice look like for domestic workers, and how does regulation help that or hinder it? And would you support a domestic workers' bill of rights? You can call us at 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'll get to calls in just a minute, but Lil wanted to get something in there as we were talking with Ai-Jin.
Yes. Well, Ai-Jin had mentioned the employers and how employers often will pay more. And so I also work for Hand in Hand, a domestic employers association that's located in the Bay, that is one of the coalition partners for the Bill of Rights, and that does a lot of political education and training and education, a lot of just education for employers around the bill. And we often see that, like, employers do want to do the right thing. They do want to pay people a fair wage. They do want to, like, have living conditions that are acceptable for everybody, and they can get the work done, and then also affect, like, allow for a high quality of care. And so part of what Hand in Hand does is allow that to happen. And so I just wanted to also put that out there.
So is Hand in Hand a place that, it's, if I'm a prospective employer and I'm confused about kind of what does it mean for me to be an employer, can I call Hand in Hand and get that information?
So you can call Hands in Hands get that information and talk to somebody. And often, like, we work on an employer educational model. And so we have general meetings that come up, and we have just different working groups, and it helps set guidelines. And we also have something called a living room gathering that brings together employers, and we'll go over, like, what are different conditions that are happening in their home? Like, how do we take one step up? How do we do just a little bit more for the people that are taking care of us and, like, providing such a high level of care? And so Hands in Hand does provide some of that.
And we'll put links to all of these organizations at our website. It's yourcallradio.org. It's a new website where you can also continue the conversation there and post comments. Let me read an email and then go to Brett in San Francisco. Here's the email first. I'm a disabled person and need help with my housework. I used to I've used many ways to find a worker, and last year I found La Colectiva. I now have a helper who speaks Spanish only, as I speak English only, and it's actually working out pretty well. I pay a little more than the recommended fee because I can, and I think if I can, I should. La Colectiva and the Day Labor Group are doing the right thing. I'm not going to put a name down because I don't trust ICE or any of the other immigration authorities. I am first-generation American here, and I have first-hand experience with that. Well, thank you for that email. Let's go to Brett in San Francisco. Welcome to your call, Brett.
Well, hi there. I'm really supportive of the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. I've been in Illinois. I'm a white male, and I started my business doing gardening and yard work, and then I expanded it into house cleaning and child care and senior care, and I find it incredibly rewarding. But my question is that in the industry, as I observe other people working, I observe employers treating female domestic workers different than myself.
Can you just give us a little bit of a sense of what do you mean? How
sure,
differently?
Sure. With female domestic workers, they seem to tend to be more demeaning or more patronizing or more kind of looking down upon them, and with me, they kind of tend to be more like treating me more like an equal as the employer is, and I find that really fascinating. And we all should be equal, and they also kind of expect me to be doing more heavy lifting or more dirty work, which I'm happy to do, but it's kind of like in a strange dichotomy between the two, and it really makes me angry when I observe employers treating female domestic workers kind of like children or kind of exploiting them, because sometimes I think perhaps some women, especially women from other countries, perhaps are a little bit more timid about being forthright and vocalizing their rights or...
Well, Brett, we're about to go to
a big concern.
Thank you so much for that. Really interesting insight. We're about to go to a break, so I want to get a quick response maybe from Matilde.
Well, really, I don't know.
Do you see this gender difference?
There's no difference, but what happened is sometimes when I ask to some employers why they prefer to work with a lady, the answer is like that we are a kind of maternal. So if they need both things at the same time, clean the house and take care of the baby, and the most important thing for them is to take care of the baby, and they need somebody sweet and trust and then very patient. And I don't know why, but I'm so sorry, but inside every woman, we have something maternal. Even if we don't have a baby, we have something that men doesn't have. So I ask that question to many of my employers, and they say, basically, because you're a lady and you're going to have passion, and you know how to treat my babies.
You're saying that you don't see a big difference in how you're treated, that women are treated less well than men.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay. And that is Matilde Vasquez. She's with La Colectiva, which is a worker-run cleaning collective. We're also joined by Lil Milagro Martinez Cornejo. She's an organizer with Mujeres Unidas y Activas. We're also joined from New York by Aijen Poo. She is director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and New York was the first state to pass a Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. And we want to take your calls. If you're a domestic worker, what is your experience on the job? And what do you think of the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights here in California? You can call us at 866-798-TALK. That's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. We also want to hear from you if you're an employer, if you have a nanny, a housekeeper, a cook, a babysitter, or an elder care assistant. What is your arrangement with them, and what is fair treatment? What does that look like? Call us at 866-798-8255. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco. We have a free email newsletter. You can join more than 7,000 of your fellow listeners who get the email every week or two. It'll keep you aware of the diverse programming on local public radio, as well as give you the opportunity to participate in station events. Just click email newsletter, that link, on the front page of KALW.org. And thank you for listening to and supporting your local public radio station, KALW San Francisco.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. It's also where you can continue the conversation now. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about how people are organizing in response to rollbacks of women's reproductive rights. Friday, of course, is our media roundtable. That's the day we speak with journalists about the week's news coverage. And on Monday, how do you cope with tragedy and loss? We'll have a conversation with our very own Marilyn Pittman about her one-woman show, It's All the Rage, which is about her own family trauma. Today, we're talking about what is the path to justice for domestic workers. We're talking about the struggles and successes of domestic workers. New York State passed a Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, which provides standards and protections for an otherwise unregulated and often exploited workforce. And there's a bill pending in California's legislature that would do the same here. So how are domestic workers getting organized? Are you a domestic worker or do you employ one? What do you consider fair treatment? How should it be enforced? And what questions do you have for our panel? You can call us at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear a clip from this is a clip about domestic workers. I believe this is from the Stephen Colbert show, right? This is somebody from the National Alliance. Let's hear it.
We have to organize for fair labor standards, for power, for respect, because the work we do is real work. It has been deemed unskilled by somebody. I don't know who this person was. My God, if I should find this person. It's not, woman's work is real work. All right?
Yes, I agree.
And that was Christine Yvette Lewis with Domestic Workers United on the Colbert Report. And so do you want to respond to that? That idea that, you know, this is not valued work, and yet it is some of the most important work in our entire society. As Matilde said, you're taking care of the children of this society, the future.
Yes. So domestic work makes all other work possible. And I cannot stress that enough. From, you know, even when we think about like women's rights, from the woman who wants to go back to the workforce but just had a child and so would like to leave her child in caring, trusted hands, or for the elder or person with a disability who like needs daily care or who requires a certain amount of care in order to just be able to go about their day in a way that gives them respect. Like, this work makes so much other work possible. And I think that it's also so exciting to see domestic workers organizing and to say we're not ashamed of what we do. We're tired of being put into the closet. We're tired of being invisibilized. This is important work. This allows other people to go about their day, but it also allows us a degree of autonomy that we would like in our own lives. And so, yes, I totally agree. I love that quote from Stephen Colbert.
And Ijen, did you want to respond on that one too?
Sure. I would just add to say that it's interesting. Gloria Steinem wrote this article years ago called Revaluing Economics, and in it she says that there are two invisible resources upon which everything else in our society and economy is built. One of those is care work in the home, or the work and the energy and labor of love and labor in general that it takes to raise American families. And the other is the Earth's natural resources, the planet's natural resources. And throughout history, those two resources have not been valued, they've not been protected, and a great part of the reason why we're headed towards the crises that we're in this country and in the economy is because we haven't adequately valued and protected those things. And so any healthy economy for the 21st century has to fundamentally revalue those things. And I think that each and every one of us who is part of a family and counts on a caregiver in one way or another, whether they're a family caregiver or a domestic worker, a loved one, that is some of the most important connection and work and energy in our lives. And I think that this is about recognizing the 2.5 million women who do this work every day, the invisible engine in our economy and in American families.
The invisible engine. Let's go next to a caller, Anne in Soquel. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Well, as I've been listening, I was thinking of something that happened. I have hired someone to help me clean up my apartments that was in the neighborhood who was looking for extra cash, and I basically would hire her to do cleaning, and I liked having her, and I appreciated her because she would come and I would always wait for when she had time, and she would do such a thorough job, and I would work with her, and I paid her a very good wage. I thought I paid her up to $25 an hour when she did a move out, which was really very dirty, you know, and I was glad to have the help. And the funny thing is, I had hired a relative of her, a man, to do some construction small jobs, and I paid him the same, and he was so upset. He got angry at me that I could dare to pay, you know, his sister-in-law this kind of money. And he actually left. He didn't want to work for me anymore. So that was kind of an interesting situation, I thought, that happened. I would like to know what is a fair wage when you're like me and you don't have somebody full-time helping as far as cleaning goes, not child care, but cleaning. You know, what is a fair wage? And I support collectives and cooperative movements on all levels.
Well, thank you so much for that. And so there's kind of two questions. Let's start with the last one, which is, what is a fair wage? And Lil Milagro, you want to start with that?
Sure. I mean, I think that's what both, I think it should always be a conversation with the worker. I think something that both Hand in Hand pushes, as well as the coalition, is, and what this bill is trying to do, is to establish guidelines. And within those guidelines, there could also be conversations. So in terms of like what a fair wage is, I mean, that's a great conversation to actually have with one's domestic worker. So it actually becomes a partnership and not such a like top down, this is what I'm going to pay you, and now you as the worker have to accept it. But having conversations about that, and then also like looking into things like, can there be some sort of compensation for health care? A lot of domestic workers don't have health care. And so they often are, because of the long hours that they work, they're often not able to receive health care themselves, and they get worse and worse and worse. Or will there be like vacation, you know, or any other, like these are all conversations that we should have. And so I think it's a conversation to have. And I think that the city of San Francisco provides a really good standard, like a living wage standard.
And can you just give us a ballpark? What do you think is a fair wage?
I think around like 18 an hour. I mean,
I can answer that. When somebody called to the labor, mm-hmm. or the women collective, mm-hmm. we usually say that it's 20 per hour. And we usually go to the house or to see the owner with a paper. In the paper, you're going to see there's 20 per hour. After the 3 hours, it's 15.
After the first 3 hours, it goes down to 15.
It's going to be 15. Uh-huh. If the employer doesn't have anything, like pencil or whatever, we're going to charge only $10 more. Sometimes they say, I don't have anything.
For cleaning supplies.
Yeah, for cleaning. Mm-hmm. Bring the vacuum, whatever, yeah. It's $10. So it's not so expensive.
Okay, that's good. That gives us a ballpark. And then let me go to you, Ijen. This is the second time that we've brought up this idea of gender disparities and the perception that women should be paid less than men. Now, I don't know if that's because carpentry is considered a skilled work, but can you just respond to that point?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's very real is that our whole notion of what is skilled work and what is unskilled work is a gendered notion, in that we've often valued work according to who's doing it. And if women do it, if it's work that's historically associated with women, in particular women of color, African-American women, immigrant women, I mean, it often devalues that work. And so I would say that it doesn't surprise me that the work that has historically been associated with women, domestic work, is not seen as skilled work and therefore is not protected, is not valued, is not recognized. And I would also not be surprised that if for the men in the industry that they're actually paid higher. I mean, in every other sector, women are still paid less per hour than men, and for the same exact work, and women of color even less than that. So I think that there are clear patterns in society where we do value work based off of who's doing it, because the racial and gender inequality in our society is so deeply rooted and so much shapes our workforce and the nature of our working conditions today.
And you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. You just heard from Ai-Jen Poo, who is director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and that's what we're talking about here on Your Call today, is the rights of domestic workers and how they're organizing and what constitutes fair working conditions and how do you regulate that. You can join our conversation by calling 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-TALK. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. We especially want to hear from you if you're a domestic worker, and we'd like to hear what your experience on the job has been and how are you treated. And if you're an employer, what do you consider fair treatment, fair play? What is your arrangement with your domestic workers, your nanny, your housekeeper, your keeper, or cook? And would you support the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights here in California? Let's go next to Stephen in Hayward. Welcome to your call, Stephen.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for taking my call. And, you know, I really want to applaud you all for doing this. I think it's a very important bill. It's an important area of the law. I'm generally against more laws, but this is a very underrepresented group. I just want to give a quick story, and it's basically to kind of address some of the things you already talked about. But it's a white woman that is a mother at a school that I work at. She has a couple kids in sixth grade and fourth grade, and she recently was divorced. Her husband is not supporting her. He moved out. He's not giving her any money, so she's pretty desperate. And she found a job. She is a nanny for three kids. Their ages are, I think, 3, 5, and 7 years old. She transports them to school. She does their laundry. She's there at the house. So now her entire life has revolved around these kids because she needs the money. The woman she works for gets paid $65 an hour as a full-time nurse at a Bay Area hospital. And she pays the mother, she pays her $1,000 a month. She doesn't pay for her gas. She doesn't pay for anything else, and she's clearly being exploited. We sat down the other day and calculated out just how much money she's making, and it's far less than minimum wage, but she's desperate. And this is a person who is not an illegal alien. She's not, you know, a person who would be afraid of being discovered by immigration. It's just a typical situation where a woman is desperate, and she needs a job, and she's being taken advantage of. And so that's story is just to illustrate that this is to protect a broader segment of society than most people might be giving thought to right now.
Well, thank you for that, Stephen. Let's get some comments from our panel. That was an interesting comparison, saying, you know, we have the expectation that if somebody is undocumented, that maybe then it's okay to pay them less than you would somebody who's a citizen. Or that's a little bit of the subtext that I heard. Pardon me, Stephen, if I'm misreading what you were saying, but Ai-Jen, can we get a little comment from you on Stephen's situation? And what do you think of that $1,000 a month arrangement?
Well, I just think that every single domestic worker, when you're looking at an industry that for 70 years has been excluded from labor protections and recognition, explicitly excluded, every single person who interacts with that industry is vulnerable, whether it's the workers, regardless of where they come from, and even the employers are vulnerable in that situation. And I would say that it's almost like the Wild West, where anything goes. And, you know, when you have no standards and you have no guidelines, you essentially have just a range of people employing workers and a range of people working in this workforce, and you just never know what you're going to get. And it's a roller coaster for a lot of people, regardless of where you come from and a high level of vulnerability in general.
I don't know if you know this, but in the 1930s, when the National Labor Relations Act was passed, to protect U.S. workers, domestic workers and farm workers were deliberately excluded from that. Do you understand? What was the politics of that? Was that a Southern?
Yes, absolutely. It actually has, that exclusion has its roots in the legacy of slavery and racism in this country, in that when Roosevelt's New Deal was being negotiated in Congress, all of our current labor, major labor laws today were negotiated as part of the New Deal under Roosevelt. So the Fair Labor Standards Act, the National Labor Relations Act, they're all part of that set of packages, that set of policies. And the only way that Southern members of Congress would agree to supporting the New Deal and these labor laws was under the condition that domestic workers and farm workers, who at the time were African American, were excluded from those protections. They could not stand for those constituencies to be able to build their political power through organizing, to be able to assert their rights. And to this day, those exclusions remain. And that is really what we're addressing here, is that injustice, that unfinished business from the civil rights era, and the way in which it affects all of us. I mean, so many millions of American families count on this workforce every day. And to know that we're dealing with outdated injustices from decades ago, and they're shaping our lives every day, just feels like something that's time has come.
Well, and that brings me to sort of the pop cultural film, The Help, which is ostensibly about black women working in upper middle class homes in the 1960s. It won an Oscar this year. One of the actresses did. And Ai-Jen, you think that this is going to help the cause of modern day domestic workers. What are the pros and cons of how The Help portrayed domestic workers, the Hollywood portrayal?
Well, what I'll say about the film is that it offered an opportunity for the stories, for the millions of people who read the book and went to see the film, and millions of people who do not often think about civil rights issues, do not often think about the realities of domestic workers, maybe have never considered the reality of that history in our nation's history and our story, right? To be able to understand that history and the fact that today, even if it wasn't an accurate historical portrayal, it opens the conversation for a conversation also about domestic workers today. And we have been able to raise up the stories of domestic workers today and talk about the fact that there are 2.5 million people doing this work today, and they're still excluded from labor protections. There's still high levels of vulnerability, and there's something that every American can do today to end those exclusions and abuses. And so it's offering the opportunity for people to be the change, or as we say, be the help, to try to pass measures like the California Bill of Rights, or work to introduce measures in their home states around the country to bring recognition and respect to this workforce.
That's Ai-Jen Poo. She's director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Let's go to Lena in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Call, Lena. Lena? Do we have Lena on the line? Lena going once? All right, why don't we go to Mariana in San Francisco? Mariana, welcome to your call.
Hi there, how are you?
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm calling. I work with the Caring Hands Workers Association, which is a part of Mujeres Unidas y Activas. And what we do is we're a group that is open to immigrant women in the city, and which Lo Milagro is an active part of. And what we do is we offer training on domestic work to these women, since for many of them it provides the first-time entry into the job market in the United States. So they're the kind of jobs that they're able to get at first if they're trying to get on their feet economically. And once we train them, then we do provide them with referrals to work. So what we are is a resource not only for the workers, but also for employers who are looking for nannies or elder care providers or people to clean their homes. And what we try to do is really adhere to what you've been talking about on the radio show today, to really offer employers resources and guidelines as to how to treat the workers. And what we do in the training is try to empower the workers so that they know what their rights are, regardless of what their status is, whether it's documentation or whether anything else is involved with the job. And it's amazing that sometimes you do hear some employers looking for workers, and they say they're looking for what they call a mother's helper, which is like a lot of the callers were saying, someone who's going to be able to not only pick up the kids, but clean the house and prepare dinner and take the dog for a walk and do all of these things. And what we're trying to say to these people is, if you're going to expect these kinds of things from workers, you need to have that conversation with them up front and expect to then pay them a fair wage that's going to reflect all of the different things that you're expecting of them. And it's amazing how many people really, you know, don't realize that you can't just pay someone $10 an hour and expect practically the world of them to be your second set of hands in every aspect of your life.
So, Mariana, a lot of what you're doing is really educating employers.
Yes, that's what we're trying to do. And we're trying to, you know, provide a really safe and secure place for these women who are looking for jobs to not just kind of be, when you're wandering out there without any backups, looking for jobs in unexpected conditions, but rather kind of help to facilitate that first-time communication so that employers and workers start off on the right foot, so that they know what to expect and know what kind of wages. And we can always be reached at caringhandsbayarea.org if people are looking for.
We'll put a link to that at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. That's Caring Hands Workers Association.
Yeah, it's in, and our website is caringhandsbayarea.org, and their referrals are always free because we're a nonprofit and we're just really here to serve the community and the women that we work
Thank
with.
Thank you, Mariana. And Lil Milagros wanted to get in here, and then let me go to Julia in San Francisco. So go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that something that Mariana and actually Matilde have also brought up is the continual, like when workers start in a position that they're given additional jobs as time goes on. And just, I recently was having a conversation with a domestic worker who was saying that when the position she first signed up for was just to do care for one person, and then the family had more people move in, and then the family's like, oh, well, we should extend, you know, like, can you take care of this other person, or can you take care of, like, now our two or three children that are here? And
Without extending
either salary or overtime, and so the hours would increase and the salary would stay the same. And the domestic workers, because they often grow to care for the families that they're taking care of, say, yes, I see that you do need help. I will stay here and do everything I can. And eventually it got to the point where this one worker was sleeping in the employer's home, and they were asked to sleep on, I think it was like a mat on the floor next to the children's bed, which is actually a pretty common, I've heard that so many times, a pretty common story. And they were getting paid the same amount as when they had just cared for one other worker, but now it was an elder, like an elder and like three different children, and it was still like such a low amount, like $1,000, when the first worker had said that they got paid, who called in said like they got paid $1,000. It was just like, whoa, that's even high for what I've heard.
And let's quickly get to Julia in San Francisco. Julia, welcome to your call. We're just running very low on time, so if you could be brief, that'd be great.
Thank you. I'm from the Hotel Workers Union, and we represent the hotel housekeepers and, you know, a very close population to domestic workers, immigrant women. And I just wanted to say it really resonated with me what Aitempu was saying about how women's work is not valued in the same way that men's work is. One of our greatest struggles for hotel housekeepers is actually around injuries that workers face because the hotels don't always allow them to use long-handled tools like mops. I don't think that anyone has ever seen a male school custodian or business custodian getting down on his hands and knees to clean a floor. And yet in the hotels, the housekeepers who are, you know, 100% women are expected to use rags and are even given knee pads, you know, just to do the same work in what ends up being a very demeaning and, you know, injury-prone way.
Well, thank you, Julia, for calling. I'm just going to cut you off because we're running out of time, and we get back to this whole gender stereotype and imbalance, both in pay and conditions. We are running up against the clock here, but I just would like to get some final thoughts from each of you. What would you like listeners to think about when considering employing a domestic worker, and how can they support this movement beyond AB 889? Lil?
Okay, yes. So I guess what I would have employers think about is that as an employer, so much of what you want to do is to have a high quality of care. You want to trust this domestic worker with your family or with, yeah, mostly with like your family, or to make sure that your house is clean and that you, there's an expectation of such high quality level of care. And why wouldn't that care then be reflected on the ability to grant basic rights that like that person who is expecting this care can go off to work like that day and receive like the right to like meal and rest breaks, the right to overtime pay, the right to 8 interrupted hours of sleep, like all of these things that will actually affect the quality of care, that will improve the quality of care that the domestic worker is providing, that they just think about that.
And let's go also to Matilde. You only have 30 seconds, Matilde. What do you want people to think about?
Oh, but that well, we need respect, we need dignity, and because we are a human being, so we need a good treatment. Beyond the money, we're proud of doing this job because it's like an art. We are putting everything in order, clean everything. That for me is an art. And the value thing, the add value for me is when they say, great job, good job, thank you, the house is good, or my babies are happy with you. Those are value for me. And all what we need is give it us our respect, our dignity. And as I told you, we're a human being.
Well, thank you for that. We're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Matilde Vasquez, who you just heard from. She's with La Colectiva, a worker-run cleaning collective. You also just heard from Lil Milagro Martinez Cornejo. She's an organizer with Mujeres Unidas y Activas. And Aijin Poo joined us from New York. She's director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. They did pass a Domestic Workers Bill of Rights in New York. And we'll put a link to all of those web resources at our new website. It's yourcallradio.org. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for your calls and emails. We apologize that we couldn't get to all of them. I'm Holly Kernan, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. How are people organizing in response to rollbacks of reproductive rights around the country? On the Next Your Call, we'll honor International Women's Day with a discussion about the status of women's reproductive rights. States enacted a record number of abortion restrictions in 2011. Virginia recently passed a bill mandating ultrasound exams for women seeking abortions. So why are women's reproductive rights being targeted now? And how are you responding? Join us at 10. It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. You can also friend us on Facebook. Ali Budner and Malihe Razazan produce the show. Matt Martin is executive producer. Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Alan Farley is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.